Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. With me is my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. It's been a few weeks since we've been in the studio together, but we're back and I'm excited to be here.
It's great to see you, Alan, and I am excited to be back together on Answers for the Family. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much.
And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain.
While bringing answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful.
Now, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
We will introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the area of health, security, and fun for you and your family.
Now, with our experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us.
We were driving over in traffic today. It took us a little while, and it made me get to thinking that we really do live in a fast-paced world where people are always on the go in LA. And you and I have talked, Alan, about the importance of diet and sitting down for a family meal, kind of slowing things down. And unfortunately, that reality is tricky in today's world. But today, we're going to get some answers.
Yes, we are. We're going to be getting answers from some very special guests. And you were talking about driving in. You know, I stopped to get a cold-pressed, you know, juice with protein as something that will give me the energy that I need to get through this. And I think that's changed so much. I mean, there was a time in which, you know, I would stop at McDonald's and get a, you know, a McGriddle or something like that. So, yes, I think it is important that we, you know, that we take care of ourselves and that we put the right things in us. And, you know, we hear from a lot of people and we read a lot of books. And today we're bringing in the experts in the field of nutrition, Dr. Alana Polda and Dr. Matthew Lederman both specialize in nutritional and lifestyle medicine. They understand the science behind diet and how it affects our body.
Together, they have created the lifestyle improvement program used in their medical center and for patients in the film Forks Over Knives, which is also a book. And they also co-authored Keep It Simple, Keep It Whole, and which is a New York Times bestseller.
So without further ado, Dr. Polda and Dr. Lederman, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, we were...
Yes, thank you.
What? Obviously, both you guys went and got your MDs and were going the regular doctor route. What happened to shift you guys into this world of whole grains?
I can start.
Okay.
So for me, it was a very personal thing. I, you know, all along, I had gravitated toward healthier eating, healthier living. My parents had that in their forefront of their minds because my dad had high cholesterol growing up. But in my second year of medical school, my father passed away from a sudden heart attack, and for me, it was obviously personally devastating, but professionally it was really devastating as well because, you know, he knew he had high cholesterol. We were following, you know, guidelines and he was eating healthier and we were on a Mediterranean type diet and he was on a statin and his numbers looked good and his weight was controlled and he was active and I couldn't piece together what had happened that, you know, could result in that. And I was really fortunate to meet Matt because at that point I was ready to leave medicine. I thought if what I know in both, I had already been trained in Chinese medicine and now was 2 years into medical school, and in what I'd known so far, I couldn't figure out what happened. This may not be a field that I wanted to be in. And when I met Matt, he had already started kind of traveling along the path of nutrition and lifestyle medicine and delving into how a plant-based diet really impacts healthy living And that was it. I mean, I read it. We had spent time with Dr. McDougall, who practices nutrition and lifestyle medicine, a plant-based diet up in Santa Rosa. And I could see in 10 days patients of his get off of cholesterol medication, get off of high blood pressure medication, get off of diabetes medication. And that was just 10 days of healthy plant-based living. And I knew that that was the key piece, and that was what I had wanted to be in medicine for, is really to be able to help people get better, and that was the way to do it.
And Dr. Letterman, what was your early path to cleaning up your diet and realizing the benefits of this for your patients?
Yeah, so for me it was something I discovered by accident. I was reading different books, and as I was reading the books, I remember at one point they were telling me, I remember thinking to myself, I think they're going to tell me to, you know, eat significantly differently than I normally do. And I remember one book telling me to try and be vegan, and that was going to make you healthy eating all these foods that I wasn't used to eating. And it sounded really good, so I tried it out. And felt better. And then I said, you know, so personally I changed my diet. And then I was not really happy in medicine, and was sort of, you know, frustrated with not really being able to heal people and fix people, and patients were frustrated too. So stumbled across, after continuing to read, doctors that were using this way of eating as a way of practice, and then spent time with people like John McDougall actually seeing it happen. And seeing results in a week that we couldn't ever get, no matter how long we worked with patients with the conventional medicine for chronic diseases that we were seeing. And, you know, decided that I need to do this for a living, and that's where we tried to open up our own center and started seeing patients practicing this way. And that's sort of at that point, you know, haven't turned back, seeing the impact we can have on people, and seeing not only how great I feel, but how great we can make patients feel now. It's really amazing.
And it's so admirable what you guys are doing, and I'm excited to jump into some of the results. But as you're speaking, I'm thinking, you know, the medical community, the money's in the cure. I mean, the money's in the medicine, not in the cure. So I'm curious if the two of you have had kind of negative feedback from colleagues.
Negative feedback from God? No. If anything, you know, we'll either get positive feedback or we'll be ignored. I think rarely do we get, that I can think of, where someone's coming out negatively towards us. They might not want to believe it if they think we're trying to get them to change their diet. But if you can look past some of the what they say and deal with what they're feeling or what they're nervous about underneath, you can often easily connect with people. So it's actually not as bad as people seem to think it is, and it's quite easy to connect with people once you realize what they're nervous about or what anxieties they have based on how they're thinking about it. You know, so sometimes they'll think it's going to taste terrible, or they're going to think it's really hard, or they think they're really deprived. You know, and as you break those down and delve into more what need they're having or what fear they're having, it's actually quite easy to connect with most people.
I mean, am I wrong to think that your book should be sitting in every waiting room of a cardiologist or internist?
No, we would love that.
Well, yeah.
If you know of somebody, please.
You know, I think Matt hit it, though. I think maybe as a industry or as a business, it's about the medicines. But I think individually, at least, you know, doctors that we meet one-on-one, they're in it to heal people. And a lot of doctors are frustrated with our conventional inability to do so. And so this is inspiring to people, but it's a slow progressing movement, you know, taking one doctor at a time, or, you know.
Yeah, and I think where Matt was going with it is more not so much the individual doctors, because I think most people, when they're going to become a doctor, they go to school, they have a desire to help. But then when the training comes in from Big Pharma, and Big Pharma is saying, this is what you need to do, this is the only answer, and so on, that at that point in time, there would be people that would sort of want to shy away from, or or as you're saying, not want to pay attention to that because it takes away from this other side that's generating a huge amount of money.
Right. And that can happen, but most people, when you are dealing with the fact they're trying to make a living, and if you can show them how to make a living this way, then they will often feel more rewarded and more excited. Now, yes, of course, if you come into a hospital and tell them, hey, you know, you're doing bypass surgery that's unnecessary, and you're going to affect their bottom line, you know, that can definitely ruffle some feathers, but that's not really how we approach it. And we try and go from we focus on the patients and trying to get the people to say, this is, you know, whether it's when they go to a restaurant trying to ask for this food, or when they go to a doctor and say, hey, this is my goal is to actually reverse my diabetes, don't just manage it, and go from the people where our incentives are truly aligned.
Yeah, you know, I was just interviewed in regards to a documentary on homelessness, and one of the subjects that came up was the fact that that fast food is now so inexpensive, and that healthy food, actually, when you go into a store, is more expensive if you go in to get an organic piece of fruit versus a non-organic piece of fruit, or so many other things that you're trying to get. You know, processed food now in a package can be so incredibly inexpensive. What is it that we can do? I mean, it seems to me that you know, where we're doing subsidies as a government, trying to subsidize for major corporations, wouldn't it make a lot more sense that we're doing subsidies for those that are growing healthy food and make that more accessible to the entire population?
Well, it would definitely be helpful if anybody subsidized the health-promoting foods. And I think that would be fantastic. I think there's a feeling out there that healthy food is expensive, and I think you can get a lot of health-promoting foods inexpensively. It just depends on what you're trying to get. So if you're trying to get, you know, an organic prepared meal, that's going to be more expensive, but you're paying for certain services. But if you're trying to get some rice and beans, mm-hmm. that's pretty cheap. You know, getting a bag of dried beans and a bag of dried rice, you know, for example, that can last a long time, and it's, you know, really cheap, significantly cheaper than trying to pay for multiple fast food meals to get the same amount of calories. So I think it depends on what people are buying or what they think in their mind is healthy, and then a lot of times we help them through that, and based on their budget, we can help them find a diet that's truly health promoting and still within their budget.
You know, in reading your book, I thought one of the really neat things was exactly the kind of, you know, lens into that, is that people that are only eating fruits and vegetables are going to end up, you know, really hungry and craving a lot, and the whole grains and legumes are actually much more reasonable and essential to the diet that you guys, you know, are discussing.
Correct. It's actually a big piece in the satiation. I mean, fruits and vegetables are, you know, an essential part of your diet as well, to provide, you know, a bolus of nutrients. It's practically a multivitamin in a variety of delicious forms. But the essence, the satiating piece, is the whole grains, the starchy vegetables, the beans and legumes. So that too becomes a really big part of your daily meals.
And I think that's one of the great things about the book. And again, as I was bringing up about the difference between fast food or being able to go in and buy healthier food, you know, people need to be educated, and that's the beauty of your book. And again, for those that are just now tuning in, the book is called Forks Over Knives Family. Now, I believe there was also a movie that was in regards to that. Tell us a little bit about the film.
So, Forks Over Knives, the documentary, explores exactly what we're talking about now, which is how diet can be so effective at reversing disease, and looks at different people that have been instrumental in this movement to make, you know, bring this information to patients and use it to treat them. And it's a fascinating look into that, as well as some real life patients being treated with it throughout the film, and you get to follow their progress. And it's just an amazing look at how powerful whole food, plant-based diets are and the impact they can have on people.
And when you're looking at their progress, I'm in the recovery field, and, you know, Al and I discuss when you see a patient come in from the first day to 30 to 60 days later, you really start to see, you know, them physically look a lot better and that light in their eye again. For people that are switching over to this plant-based diet, if that's I want to make sure I'm using the right language, what are we seeing, and what kind of timetable are we looking at where people start to feel good?
Well, you know, that depends, right? So we'll have people that, and we've had people where we take them off medications and they go 100% into this program, and they're feeling better the next day. And whether that's from the food or the side effects of the medications that they no longer have to be on, or some combination, or just the fact that they're feeling optimistic for the first time in years or sometimes decades. I'm not. It's probably a combination, but you feel better quite quickly, and often it depends on your attitude, right? There's some people that are dragged in by their significant other, and they don't even want to make the change, versus those that are desperate for the answers, and once you give them to them, they just go off and are running, and that's part of the process as practitioners, as doctors, is us trying to assess where that patient is in their readiness for change, and helping them get to their goals. And I think that's a key piece that we don't look. A lot of times as doctors, you're in the conventional system, you're like, here's your medication, this is going to fix you, and just take it and we're done. And there's a lot more that's required here to help people successfully make the change and then stick with it.
And I think for me, one of the things that is really neat to see is, you know, people, which is exciting too, has already kind of have an expectation, because it's been shown that a plant-based diet can reverse diabetes, reverse heart disease, lower blood pressure and cholesterol and blood sugars. But what people get really excited about are the symptoms that they attribute to, oh, I'm just aging and I have this ache and this pain and this headache and this stomach trouble, you know, and I don't really have a lot of energy, and as they start adopting healthier eating habits, a lot of those things start getting better and they start feeling more vibrant. And one of the consistent things that I hear is, I feel younger than I have in years.
Wow.
And that says a lot.
Yeah, and one of the other things that's great in regards to the book is the fact that you talk about changing someone's diet even from the standpoint of being pregnant. And when Matt said that this should be in every in every hospital, in every cardiologist office, I think it should also be in every pediatric office, because you know here's a situation to where when someone is pregnant, they are told not to smoke. They are told not to drink. They are told not to do drugs. Why aren't we also telling them the value of eating correctly as well?
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. And I think for a lot of women, they're looking for those answers too. You know, they want, sometimes what you don't want for yourself, you want for your children. And this new person who's growing inside of you, and you want to give them the best chance. And that was one of the inspirations for writing this book, was that during my two pregnancies, you know, I kept getting people coming and asking, you know, how are you doing this and how does it feel, and you know, what are you eating, and write a book about this. So yeah, I think it would be great.
You know, I myself am a meat eater, and I've gone back and forth trying to switch over, and I've never really made the full commitment. The idea really is probably the fear of, you know, craving. How long are people reporting kind of having that kind of craving for other foods when they go through a kind of a switchover?
Well, I mean, here's the thing, is that these, you know, let's use you as an example, since you, if you don't mind.
Please.
You know, labeling yourself a meat eater or not is going to set you, can just sort of set you up in the wrong direction. Okay. And what you should really be telling yourself is, I want to eat as many whole plant foods as possible and as many meals as possible, and use animal products as a last resort instead of a first resort.
Okay.
So if there's a, you know, Thanksgiving feasts that you want to take part in, and you know, or there's certain, you know, when you go out to a restaurant, there's a certain dish that you really like. But, you know, find all the deal break, you know, find all the areas that you just right now are really scaring you from jumping into this, and then everything else, make the switch there. Yeah. You know, and as far as the cravings, those, you know, your brain can get used to eating just about anything after a period of a month or two. And the key is to be persistent, and you have to be optimistic and excited about it. Mm-hmm. If two people are trying the same food and one person's looking for this reasons why this isn't going to work and the other person's looking for reasons why this could work, the person that's looking to try and find the food and say, even though they both can tell it's different than what they're used to, the person that's looking to try and prove to themselves that they can make this work is the one that's going to most likely be successful. So that's the idea, is to really get your attitude in. And you know, we tell patients this all the time. Get your attitude in line with success and being optimistic about how this is going to work and how you're going to feel. And put your deal breakers on the side, and don't worry about those right now. There's so much, you know, low-hanging fruit to deal with, and focus on that first.
Nice. Yeah, and I think even beyond the physical part or our attitude part is, I think our body adjusts. I know that I've gone through periods of time to where I've said, okay, I'm not going to eat red meat for a period of time. And then when I do, and I may have gone 6 months or a year without, and then when I do, it's like my body, it sits very heavy. It's like my body doesn't know what to do with it, and my body's not happy about it, you know. So I think our body adjusts as well as we do psychologically.
Yes.
Is that true?
I agree, and we find that happening. And the longer you go, and you know, I even found this personally, because I over time sort of, as I learned more, I would remove and add things, and you know, so I, for a while, I was just eating plant foods, but I didn't get rid of, you know, all the oils, and then when you add oil back after you've gotten rid of it for a period of time, it really hits you. Or if, you know, for salt, I wasn't that aware of how much salt I was consuming originally, and then as I tried to be aware of it and find substitutes, all of a sudden, if I'd have a salty meal, it hit me, even though I remember having that meal, you know, time ago, and there was no problem. So your body gets used to it, and then the good thing is, that's how you can tell if something's healthy, right? If you don't eat bananas for a period of 6 or 8 months, and all of a sudden you have a banana, you feel great still. And if there's a food that you're eating, and all of a sudden you feel terrible after you eat it, it's time to reflect on that and see if that's something you really want and need to keep in your program.
Wow, so true. And so with raising your kids on this diet, have you noticed any, you know, physical differences or, you know, health, you know, benefits so far?
Absolutely. I'm smiling as you say that. our kids are now 3 and 5 and have never had an ear infection, which a lot of kids have.
Yeah.
You know, they are vibrant and thriving and energetic, and I just feel like, you know, they do catch the colds, and you know, they're in preschool now, so they come back with gifts all the time, but I feel like they carry a stronger immunity. Mm-hmm. You know, like they get over it quickly. It never escalates to, at least not yet, it hasn't, to, you know, really bad flu, or, you know, they're bedridden, or have it for days on end. And so, I don't know, I'm convinced that, you know, that is a stronger immune system, and it makes sense based on what we know happens and what we see happen with adults. So I think it's brought a lot of positivity to their health.
And especially long-term, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, what if they're, you know, if you're raising your children on this diet and you go to a birthday party, I mean, is there cheat days allowed? You know, like Dr. Lederman was saying, for me, you know, maybe the, you know, every once in a while, if Thanksgiving dinner happens, for just while I'm getting going, it's okay. What? How do you guys handle situations like that?
Well, go ahead.
We actually just went to a birthday party this weekend with Kylie, and you know, we've talked to her about our concerns and why we eat this way. So she's very aware of health and how we're worried about how these other foods can make you sick, and they're not as healthy, and this is why we eat what we do. And then when we go to the party, we'll bring all sorts of treats that are not necessarily the healthiest, but they're still, you know, there might not be certain ingredients that we don't want in there. And we'll save those special snacks for the party, so she's still enjoying them and having their sort of getting a treat, if you will. And then in the end, as they get older, I mean, she's only 5 now, so she's pretty much excited. She'll say, is that vegan? And if it's not, she won't eat it on her own. And we've also told her that if you're ever out and they're having something that's not vegan but you really want it, if you wait, we'll make sure when you get home, we'll get you, you know, 2 vegan options of whatever it was that you got. So we have that little thing that we play with her where, you know, there was serving pizza and it wasn't vegan, so we immediately, when we left the party, we got her own pizza that was had, you know, vegetables on it and was, you know, a vegan version, and she was super happy with that and loved it. And then she got extra snacks when she got home, so she was fine with it. But it's, you have to figure out what works, because in the end, if she gets older and she's like, I really want that cake, and I'm, you know, we explain it to her and we talk about it. Once in a while is not going to make or break her anyway, but if we don't have to, we don't do it. So right now, she's fine, and if that changes, we'll address it, we'll talk through it, and we'll figure out another option that works.
Right, and at the in talking through that also, the gamut of plant-based foods, you know, right, it's huge. So you can do 100% whole, you know, which is the fruits and vegetables, legumes, whole grains. But there's a good variety of processed options as well. And we don't keep that in our house on a regular basis for the girls. So it is something that they consider as a treat. But, for example, our 3-year-old just had a birthday celebration. It was her birthday, and we ordered from Whole Foods Market a vegan vanilla chocolate cake. And it looked like every other kid birthday cake, you know, and had the frosting and the mermaid on top. And I mean, no one could tell from looking at it that it was a vegan version of, you know, but, and all the kids liked it. And my daughter thought, you know, she's just like every other kid. So it's also about getting creative, you know, and you can, just like Matt said about the pizza, you can emulate a lot of different types of foods and still keep it in a plant-based world. And on top of that, there are even options to do that in healthier and healthier ways.
Right, because you can take, Halloween, for example. So we don't force it on them. I mean, there's certain things that will, you know, for safety, where we say, hey, you don't really have a say in this. But in general, we try to get them to buy into it. So, you know, I'll say, you know, hey, do you want this or do you want that vegan cupcake that you really like, you know, from that store over here? And she'll say, oh, I really want the vegan one. Okay, so wait until we're done and we'll go get that. Or for Halloween, we'll say, hey, you can have all that candy, or you can switch it in for these toys over here, but the toys cost this much candy. So they still get excited to go get the candy because they need to have enough to trade it in for the toys. Yeah. So they get to go trick-or-treating, and then they trade in the candy, and they prefer the toys. You know, so the key is getting creative, like Alona said, and you can be pretty successful.
The part I really like, too, is it's similar to the way we'd want to approach, I guess, drugs and alcohol with our kids is talk to them, explain to them. You're explaining everything to them. And then obviously there's hard no's on certain things, but there's also alternatives. But the conversations are starting early about food.
Right. That's key.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd be amazed how much they actually retain and understand. You know, our 3-year-old walks around, you know, talking to other people and asking, is that vegan? Oh, I can't eat that because A, B, and C. You know, and so sometimes we underestimate what they understand and what they comprehend and what they can take with them. That's a really cool thing about parenthood, too. I'm humbled all the time by, you know, how much our kids do understand and how helpful it is to explain to them the why of what we do.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. For those of you out there, if you want to grab a little snack, make sure it's a healthy one. We'll be right back in about a minute. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and the subject today is forks over knives. We are talking about every parent's guide to raising healthy, happy kids on a whole food, plant-based diet. Now, one of the questions that I had, it has to do with some of the other guests that we've had, and we've talked about different books. And we try to learn ourselves from, you know, from everything that we gain here. One of the books was called Grain Brain, and it was suggesting that a lot of grains out there are also not good for us. So now, where I was trying before to get like Ezekiel bread over regular bread because I wanted it to be a whole grain, now it was suggesting that even some of those weren't good. You know, then I started getting, you know, like quinoa pasta because it was now going to be a better type of grain. What are some of the things that we need to know that will help us to add those things that we need to get the energy that we need beyond just the fruits and vegetables?
So the nice thing about whole foods plant-based diet is, one, even if you decided not to eat wheat or gluten or grains, you know, there's still so many other ways to consume a healthy whole food plant-based diet. You have all your starchy vegetables. Fruits, yeah, but you know, I mean, there's legumes, you know, there it depends on what it is your goal is. But we also, you know, struggle with books that are telling people to, you know, sort of condemn all carbohydrates, and then people, you know, whether it's because they go gluten free or because they get rid of all the quote unquote carbs and they feel better. Well, most of what people were eating were processed, refined junk carbs. You know, people eat on average barely a serving of whole grains a day, and that's on average. Most people aren't even consuming that much. So, and then when you look at all the studies as far as whole grains, and they across the board will show you that, you know, people do better on them. They reverse disease. They feel better. I mean, there's so many studies supporting the use of whole grains, including major organizations saying if you're trying to find the best diet, for example, when you have cancer survivors, you know, it's whole grains, diet high in whole grains, fruits and vegetables. You know, even if you're trying to treat diabetes, whole grains are the way to do it. Now, if you want to lump all carbs together, that's where you're going to wind up confusing people. So it's important to sort of look underneath the, you know, the initial sentences there and make sure that what people are saying is true across the board, or maybe there's some truth and then there's some areas that we have to sort of modify what their understanding is. And does that make sense?
Yeah, but yeah. Excuse my ignorance in the sense that when you say whole grains, can you kind of give me an idea of what that means?
So whole grains, you're talking about whole wheat, you know, your rice, barley, you know, those are the things I'm talking about when I say whole grains. And then there's your refined grains, which is your, you know, white flour, what we think of when we eat the junk foods, you know, cookies, cakes, your, you know, white bread. And then you can even refine things from brown rice down to white rice. You know, so there's different levels of refinement. There's different levels of processing. And then on top of that, once you refine it down to a white flour, then you add lots of sugar, oil, and salt to it, and it really becomes a doozy. So, and that's all lumped under the term carbs. So a lot of people, when they go gluten-free, for example, feel better when they get rid of the gluten, but it's really because they got rid of the cupcakes and the cookies and the all the refined stuff. And it's and once they get rid of all that extra junk, they feel better despite the gluten, not because of the gluten necessarily. And there's a small percentage of people that actually do have gluten sensitivities and gluten and true celiac disease, and those people really would do better eliminating gluten. But that's a small percentage, and we're telling people to restrict their diet significantly from what they're used to already. So we say, hey, if you really feel better off of even whole grains, that's fine, but I'd hate for you to restrict your diet in a way, you know, more than you have to. So it's up to you, and here are options to go in either direction, but not everybody has to be that restrictive despite what some of the books out there say.
And when we're going to stores, you know, I'm starting to get a better picture, you know, with the brown rices and the darker breads. Are most stuff labeled in ways that the common consumer can understand the difference?
Well, that's a whole other conversation. Industry is pretty smart out there, and they can even make breads brown by coloring them, and people think they're healthier.
Wow.
So it's really looking for things that say 100% whole wheat or 100% whole grain flour, depending on what it is. And then you got to look for the other additives if they add lots of oil and sugars or things like that can make the food less and less healthy.
Now, we have a listener question that has come in, and again, we want to thank those that take the time. This one reads, "It is such a struggle to keep my teens on the right track with their eating when they have such ready access to fast food everywhere they go, including school. We were at the local college 3 days ago for an evening, and it is even worse there with every vending machine filled with chips, cookies, and soft drinks. It is no wonder the obesity levels are skyrocketing. How does your book deal with our youth, and what advice can you give parents like ourselves whose children are going off to high school and or college?"
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, and it's tough, right? Because there are many stages in our children's lives where independence and independent thinking and independent living, you know, stages in development. And right now, I mean, we have two little kids, so it's, for us, what has proven extremely effective is continuing to reinforce education around why we do the things that we do so that it doesn't feel like a punishment and it doesn't feel like a dictatorship of, you know, or authoritarian rule, but that it's a collaborative effort around, you know, the importance, like, that it's coming from concerns over their health, concerns over their well-being, and I think modeling, you know, setting the example for your children so that they can see you thriving and you as a thriving role model continuing to reinforce what you're doing at home, and the why of it all, and helping them in their environment, wherever their environment is, to at least identify the healthier choices that are available to them so that they know, you know, that yes, the vending machine might have chips, but the store right next door has other, you know, delicious, exciting options. And the school cafeteria may offer, you know, this meal, but you can easily make or find this meal as well. So also finding substitutes in their environment that they can enjoy. Another thing that we do with our patients that has proven really effective and that people like is something called three-phase eating. And we talk about it in the book, but it's incorporating your healthiest meal first, kind of crowding out unhealthier choices by eating healthier choices first. So even if your child really wants to go to that vending machine for a snack, if they have in their head, well, first I need to eat a big, you know, bowl of brown rice and beans, or first I have to have a big salad or a big bowl of oatmeal and fruit, and then I can go have this. You kind of crowd out how much junk they can have in a given day. So those are some ideas that come to mind for me.
My brain with politics is at all, it's done. I can't function anymore. But I do want to ask the question, do you guys see schools and through, you know, lobbyists or through whatever, do you see some sort of movement in the areas of bringing in some whole grains and some healthier foods into the school systems?
You know, I hope so. I know that there are people and lobbying the LAUSD and already making some significant changes for school systems here. I know that, you know, voices carry, and so the more involvement parents have in a given school environment to voice their opinions, to voice their objections, to offer alternatives, to get involved, you know, I think one of the things that we see is where changes happen, the greatest changes happen are in communities where people are really involved and people really make an effort to get out there and say how they feel and say what they're looking for and help to make those changes actually happen. So I always encourage people to have their voices heard and, you know, not to think that just because they're one person, they may just be dismissed, because you'll be surprised how many people along the way you'll meet that are that will walk that path with you.
Yeah, and I hope everybody that's listening takes this as sort of marching orders. You know, speak out. You know, if you have children in the school, speak out as to what's being given to them. You know, you can do so much, obviously, within your home, the changes that you can make. But without speaking out, they're still going to go to a school that's going to have these other choices. And we all know that peer pressure is very strong. If this is what all the other kids are eating, you know, they may want to fall into that same category because of the peer pressure. So again, I think it's great if everybody speaks out and we get those changes done, because as I said earlier, the fact that we're starting right, you know, in your book, you're starting right from the point in which someone is pregnant. Let's start with the children younger and younger so that they're not craving these things that are in the vending machines. Now, let me ask another question that I think is on a lot of people's mind and, in fact, was asked of me while I was reading your book at the gym. What are your thoughts about vitamins and supplements? Where does that fit in, and how much of that is maybe a little over projected to us?
So... Sorry. So are you able to hear me? I was talking and I'm not sure.
Yeah, we're
you able
clear.
To hear me there?
Yes, we
Great.
Can hear you okay. now.
Perfect. So so basically we get a lot of questions about supplements, and the idea about supplements is to try and meet your vitamin and mineral and micronutrient needs using whole plant foods as much as possible. And in most cases, a whole plant-based food diet will allow that to happen, and then and also a healthy lifestyle is important and can help you with certain other things. But the key is to try and do that with diet and lifestyle as much as possible. And then if you are still running into trouble or you have certain medical issues, there might be individual cases where certain additional supplementation is indicated, and that's sort of a case-by-case basis that we go through with patients and use those more from a perspective of medications or and less just as a insurance plan that some people like to think of supplements as.
So what I hear you saying is that you may get patients that come in and that are dealing with certain issues, that there are supplements that you would put them on that would quickly get them up to the level that they need, but that then by putting them on a healthy diet, you can wean them off the supplements and they're going to get everything that they need from the foods that they're taking in?
Well, we might not even start with supplements. I mean, most times when people switch to a whole plant foods diet, their body is absorbing all of the nutrients they need and does a great job without even adding supplements. But on occasion, there might be someone that would benefit or could potentially benefit with a trial of supplementation of in certain areas. So that's really, but we just use it more as a medication. And then if some people, you know, say, hey, you know what, I'm not sure I really want to use a vitamin supplement or a multivitamin or something like that, because they think that would help them. They just want to be careful to avoid the supplements that have things that are known to cause harm. And then it's sort of a best guess at that point. There's evidence out there that in general, it appears supplements do not have significant impact for the average person, and in some cases can have harm. So you just want to be really careful, and then you have to ask yourself, are you more concerned to be the person that takes something and finds out later that it causes harm, or to not take something and find out later that it actually would have been helpful to have it? And right now, it's you have to sort of make your own personal decision as to what helps you, and make sure that you're also clear that you're not going to take something that clearly has been shown to cause harm. So those are sort of how we frame it, but it's a personal decision, and regardless of what you decide to do with supplements, the key is to really, you know, get as much of the whole plant foods in, because that's the safest way to get almost all of your nutrients. The one supplement that we tell people on a plant-based diet that has been clearly shown to be important, essential, non-negotiable is B12. And if you're doing 100% plant-based diet, or even adding just a little bit of animal products, the best way to get your B12 is to supplement that. And that's the one caveat there.
You know, the diet fascinates me. I think it's incredible what you guys are doing. And from a psychologist's point of view, I'm wondering, have you guys seen stories and patients come through your office where you've seen a lot of mental health issues change due to the diet?
So there's different levels of mental health issues that people are dealing with. And there's people that are have mildly depressed mood, are just, you know, feeling a bit hopeless and just not feeling great about life. They're not feeling good physically. And we tend to see when people start improving their health and feeling optimistic and, working with them on ways to try and be happier, and we give them the tools of diet and lifestyle, they really do reverse a lot of these mental health issues that they were dealing with. And then there's people that have significant mental health issues that are sometimes improved, or they're able to cope more effectively, but they still need some medication to manage those. And we don't like to, you know, say this is the fountain of youth and every single person's going to reverse every single disease. I think that would be unfair and unreasonable. But I think in general, most diseases that you have, if they're not reversed or improved, you're able to cope with them a lot better than you were previously when you weren't feeling as well.
Yeah, I would
and
think
you were sort of beating yourself up.
I would think and that I think, mood disorders especially. Ahead. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and I think, like Matt said, there's a spectrum, but I think what I see regularly is that, you know, years and years of dieting and struggling with food addictions and what to eat and what not to eat and the confusion around, how to do better for yourself just weighs on people, literally and figuratively. And I think over time, people have this hopeless feeling of, you know, kind of falling into the, this is going to be genetic, this is just written in the stars for me, this is just my path to diabetes or my path to heart disease. And what this change offers them is it reignites that hope. It's an empowerment to show them that, you know, this is not hopeless. This is not dictated to me in the stars. I can change the direction of my health. And that empowerment goes a long way in helping people shift their attitude and their well-being.
Yeah, I completely agree, both mentally and physically. And at a time right now in which, you know, healthcare is a major topic that people are discussing, it's a major expense for most people. So something like this that we can do that not only makes us better mentally, better physically, but reduces some of those costs, you know, has got to be a win-win. Now, we're just about out of time. Tell people where they can get the book. Again, it's Forks Over Knives Family. Where can they get it? And is there also a website or something if they have questions for you?
Yeah, they can get it pretty much anywhere they're selling books. It's on Amazon.com. There's a great website, supporting site, ForksOverKnives.com, that sells the book, sells other support materials, has great information, and then links to other sites as well.
Well, that's great.
Well, thank you so much, both, for coming on the show. We really enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And please be sure to put on your calendar and tune in next Monday when best-selling author Frank Lawley joins us to discuss his new book, Your Best Healthcare Now. Get doctor discounts, save with better health insurance, and find affordable prescriptions. And if you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at AnswersForTheFamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you're on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word.
All right, and for everybody out there, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And again, when you go to our site, print out a copy of that of the thankfulness journal. Bring that to your Thanksgiving table. Let everybody really sit down and talk about what they are truly thankful for. So again, have a great Thanksgiving. Be good human beings, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.